It takes great restraint to not pile on cues in a yoga class. When it comes to leading a yoga class, I'd say the top two areas of attention and often concern for yoga teachers is first, how to effectively sequence classes, and secondly, what cues to use. Cues are more than just a set of instructions. Cues essentially provide the framework within the structure of sequencing you offer in an asana class. Cues can either invite students into the deeper atmosphere of the practice experience, or they can impede this progression when the student spends most of the time trying to figure out what you mean and what you are actually asking them to do. Welcome to the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast, the podcast for yoga teachers to learn tips, techniques, and teaching approaches in order to build confidence and success teaching yoga. I am your host, Sandy Raper, and on this podcast, I am going to share with you my strategies and approach to teaching, along with stories from many teaching experiences that have supported me within a thriving teaching career for over two decades. Thank you for joining me today. Let's get back to today's episode. This episode of the Beyond Yoga Teacher Training Podcast is sponsored by the Amino Company's 100% science-backed patented blend of essential amino acids called Life. Life is designed for heart health and active aging that works to improve your quality of life so that you can stay healthy and active as you age. When it comes to aging, it is so important for me to maintain consistent, healthy routines, and Life is a wonderful addition to my overall wellness plan and just what I need to support my ability to remain functioning with a high level of energy, strength, and flow throughout my day. Life is making it easy for me to know I am taking care of myself in a way that helps me take care of others. If you're looking for a nutritional advantage when it comes to maintaining muscle mass and cardiovascular health as you age, I recommend you give Life a try. And right now, you can get 30% off when you visit aminoco.com/beyondyoga and use the discount code Beyond Yoga. Click the link in the show notes and receive 30% off this wonderful product, and you'll even receive a free gift with your purchase. Now, let's get back to today's episode. Last year, around this time, I released an episode about the five words that yoga teachers should stop using. This episode has quickly made its way into the top 10 episodes of this podcast, actually. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, then go back after you finish this one and check out episode 65. In evaluation of the rise and popularity of that episode, I thought I would follow up today by sharing with you five phrases that you should really consider removing from your class directive. Stay with me as I promise we will dig into these phrases shortly, but before we do, I want to give some layers of context around cueing because, as I mentioned in the intro, this along with sequencing can quickly become a roadblock in your development as a yoga teacher unless you begin to evaluate and consider what you're saying and why you're even asking students to do what you're asking them to do with the collection of cues and directives that you use to lead class. First of all, if you desire to be an effective communicator, then it's of great importance that you broaden or even shift your perspective to encompass not only your development and understanding of what to say and how to lead, but you'll need to also consider the transfer of information you're communicating. And how is it possibly being received by the listener, or in this case, the students? Consider this, there are two distinctly different experiences taking place within the setting of a yoga class. It's no different when you consider having a conversation with someone else. There is going to be two different experiences. You've got the speaker and you've got the listener. In the context of a yoga class, there is the student experience and then there is the experience that the teacher is having. Both experiences set up the creation of a collective learning opportunity for each individual involved, and both experiences invite individuals to show up in a capacity that contributes to the ultimate benefit of all. The teacher shows up with the capacity of effectively leading a class experience comprised of an intelligently organized class sequence. And it's coupled with clear cues and directives that ultimately invites and offers students a fresh encounter in their yoga practice. There is a level of responsibility in showing up as a student as well, showing up in the capacity and willingness to learn and listen. As a teacher, we not only teach students yoga primarily through the setting of the yoga asana practice, but we're also supporting them in their development of being a better communicator, along with their ability to grow as a learner and student of the practice. All right, let's get to the five phrases that I believe should be gleaned out of the language that we're using to direct and lead yoga classes. Let's begin with the phrase, "What do you want to do today?" or question, rather. I've heard this cued at the beginning of class for many years now, and I've yet to understand and even have a teacher who uses this phrase explain to me what their intention is for stating this at the beginning of the class. For me, I interpret this phrase in a couple of ways. First, I'm thinking, oh boy, this teacher doesn't have a plan. I have just paid X amount of dollars for this class, and now the teacher hasn't prepared for the class and is seeking suggestions. Along with this potential interpretation, it's safe to say that the students who are bold enough to actually answer this question are most likely going to suggest core or hips. I've been in these classes, and I've experienced this firsthand on many occasions. Another interpretation or question that arises for me when this phrase is used is this: is the teacher trying to be perceived as this go with the flow, spur of the moment, freestyle teacher who has this elevated skill set that they can whip up a customized sequence based upon the suggestions that possibly one or two students who actually share that day what they would like to do? I guess my biggest perplexity with this phrase is that I don't understand the value of asking this question at the beginning of a typical drop-in class experience. This type of question might better serve a private class instruction instead, and in that case, I'm not sure of the true relevance of using this phrase. Let's view this phrase through the lens of trust and understanding of your role as a teacher. And as I speak too often when it comes to teaching yoga, the sequencing method or approach you use should be well thought out and intentional. It does matter because nothing is random when it comes to understanding how the body moves and how to organize a progression of yoga poses in order to provide relevance for the practitioner, the student, as it applies to their function for everyday living. Every class you lead should be comprised of a cohesive set of postures to practice that offers the students a cohesive experience in every aspect of the practice and asana exploration. Within this approach, there really isn't a need to ask because you have already planned and you will provide an experience that meets their needs regardless of any specific request that is made. When we go in to lead a practice, we are ready to do so because of the preparation that has already taken place prior to that moment we begin the class. So I'm not sure the value you're adding when asking the collective what they want to do as if you aren't prepared with a sequence plan that day. Check out episode 110, I Don't Take Requests, if you want to hear more about asking of information or requests from students and how that applies to your duty of care as a teacher. Let's move along to the next phrase, if it's in your practice. Have I used this phrase before? Yes, but since I've decided to remove it, because here's how this phrase just might be interpreted, and it might create speculation on the student's part, because what if they would like to know and be taught how to incorporate the pose or the progression or expression that you are cueing? I'd like to suggest removing this phrase unless you are going to spend some time breaking down the pose or that particular teaching emphasis that you're teaching that day that those who would like to begin exploring or incorporating in their practice, they can actually be equipped and know how to do so. For me, I choose not to say this unless I am willing to give some additional instruction, especially to those who are what I like to call the maybes in the class. Just right there, ready to explore this pose, this progression, whatever it may be, if I'm ready to guide them to it or guide them within it. You see, there are generally three different approaches taking place in class by students. You have the already there students. These are the students that as soon as you mention or call the pose name, they are already making their way into the shape. You then have the maybe group that I just mentioned. They just might be willing to explore the pose you're offering, but they need some additional guidance and supportive cueing that aids them in getting into their expression. Lastly, you'll have what I like to call the never-evers. These folks are going to stay right where they are and aren't seeking to venture into the pose that you're offering. And if you're going to use the phrase, if it's in your practice, then I'm going to suggest that you're ready and that you follow up that phrase by actually instructing the group on how they can make that pose part of their practice. What will happen at this point is that you'll have a breakdown time within the practice where you're kind of workshopping the pose, so to speak. Here's where your cueing will focus more heavily towards the maybe group or those one day kind of students, supporting them as they explore. You'll keep an eye on those already there students, making sure that they're safe and supported at the same time. And you will have given a start point version of the pose that will support the never evers. And you'll keep an eye on them, giving them additional encouragement and support as well. This all happens simultaneously, and this mixed level approach allows for all variations and approaches to students in your class, and they feel supported and acknowledged by you. It's kind of like you're telling them, I see you. This eliminates exclusion, and it invites and supports curiosity as well as acceptance for all students to be in the practice and in the particular pose that fits their needs and autonomous experience that day. Last note to mention on this is to be very mindful that although you have broken the flow by taking some additional time to break down a pose in this workshop style approach, it will be important for you to discern and facilitate everyone back into flow as they make their way back into the practice experience and the cultivation of that one-pointed awareness. This is your job as a skillful facilitator, so be mindful and seek to do this well. This adds great value to the experience and suggests to students that you are trustworthy and supportive in seeking to educate and equip them as they proceed through the practice, rather than throwing out a quick, "if it's in your practice" phrase without any depth of providing additional layers of teaching and guidance. Without the commitment of being willing to add an expanded learning opportunity, this phrase loses its value in this instance and can quickly become exclusive rather than inclusive. The next phrase that I want to suggest gleaning from your directive in class are statements such as, "you should feel blank" in a pose. This is a projective phrase rather than a directive. You are prescribing as well as projecting your experience upon the student, and in doing so, you could be creating confusion or doubt within the student when they aren't necessarily feeling what you're telling them that they should be feeling. This also adds to the sense of the practice as a performance, and that as a student, they should be doing, or feeling in this case, what you are asking them to do. Consider using language and words of invitation and curiosity. Invite students to notice what they feel and what they are sensing in their bodies. Ultimately, as we teach a practice that leads to self-awareness and this withdrawal from the external or the five senses, we want to encourage students into an experience where they become fully aware of their spatial awareness and development of interoception within their bodies and practice experience that's all going on within the yoga pose shapes. Language is crucial here to support students in this discovery. Rather than telling students what they should feel, opt for guiding language that empowers them to be with their own internal experience with sensations in their body. Consider instead using the phrase, "the target area of this pose is blank, and where do you notice sensation?" It's also important to note here that when guiding students to notice their own experience of sensation, offer supportive language that invites reflection rather than judgment labels in what they are sensing. It's not a time to label something good or bad, but rather to be in the experience of just noticing what is present, what is without the need of attaching a label. This type of support guides and equips students into the realm of pure awareness that is void of preference or projection. The next phrase I want to share is closely related to the last one, and I touched briefly on it when I shared about the practice becoming perceived as a performance. This phrase being, "I want you to blank." Once again, this phrase projects and suggests that you are doing what the teacher is asking you to do. Rather than telling students you want them to do something with the cues you are giving, how might you offer considerations instead and allow the empowering opportunity of choice to arise and guide the class? As often as we can, I believe it's important to use language that presents students in the experience with an evaluation of how they are being, rather than the emphasis revolving around production, performance, and what they are doing. Society and our culture is driven by performance, and it's our job as yoga teachers to facilitate experiences within the practice setting that invites the opposite approach, an approach that supports students in the creation, once again, of an autonomous experience, because that supports and leads students into a practice that becomes relevant for their daily living. Let your directives be less about telling students what you want them to do and more about using your cues and language to equip and pique their curiosity and invite them to create the experience they wish to have, not the one that you are telling them you want them to have. When you show up in this capacity and hold that underlying space for students, then they have the ability to have a profound encounter in the practice that I know you desire for them, but this can manifest and be present without you telling them what you want them to do. Let them create their own experience. The last phrase that I'm going to ask that you consider or reconsider using is another phrase that has potential to shift the student's awareness back to the external and possibly performance aspect of the experience. I'll call this the "you all look beautiful," or if you're from the South, "y'all look beautiful." You might have even heard just simply the word "beautiful" used. I get it. I've used this one too, but let's explore this and the implications that might come from using or overusing this type of acknowledgement that could be perceived as the goal or intention of practicing yoga and the yoga poses that they need to look a certain way. Now, I believe when this phrase is used, it's being used first and foremost to be used as an encouragement and that the teacher is expressing the beauty of what they see. I get it. But secondly, this is also a filler word. It's a word that sometimes is being said so repeatedly and subconsciously that you probably aren't even aware that you're using it and how many times you're using it. And when we use these filler words in this regards, it most certainly loses its encouraging quality and could possibly become annoying due to the repetitive nature of how often it's being used. I believe when this type of phrase or these filler words are used, it could potentially be coming from this place within the teacher that the teacher feels uncomfortable with a space that has no words. So they're trying to fill the space with these fillers. So be aware of this and understand when you have tendencies to try to fill all the space of the room and the class experience with words. Rather, can you use that restraint again that I mentioned? Takes great restraint to not pile on cues or try to fill the entire teaching space with words. Rather, challenge yourself to create some pauses in between and allow that stillness and that settling of silence fill the space instead. As I wrap up today, my intention and the key takeaway for offering this episode is to heighten your awareness to understanding what you're saying and evaluating why you're saying these phrases. When you lead classes, it's important that with every directive, every cue, every dialogue used, that you are discerning and taking note of what's being said, or in some cases, what's not being said, but rather the implication. It does matter. It matters if you desire to communicate effectively and actually lead students beyond the external experience or reflection of the yoga pose shape. When you step in to lead a class, it's important to be genuine and be you leading the class. Strive to be professional and take seriously your role as a teacher and facilitator. It's not about you, but your effectiveness and attention to detail when it comes to providing clear directives that not only guide students within the technical aspect of the practice, but also support students to dive below the surface, to go beyond the pose or the reflection of the shape they're creating. A great refinement tool I always offer to teachers, and one that I use often to evaluate my habits of speech and clarity of directing and cueing a yoga class, is to voice record yourself teaching, and then not only listen to the recording, but actually take your class. Notice the clarity of your directives. Notice whether or not you're in need of a visual demonstration to understand what you're cueing. Notice where you can glean out and say less, remove some of those repetitive filler words. Notice the implication of the phrases that you use, and seek to understand what might students actually be hearing from you when you teach. Take some time to reflect on your class narrative and then sharpen your listening skills the next time you teach. And you just might catch yourself saying some of these phrases that I have shared about today. If so, it's okay. Give yourself some grace. Make a mental marker. The first part of refining and growing in your development as a teacher is becoming aware of what you're doing and how you are being. Sounds familiar, huh? Sounds like the yoga practice. It's also the first part of our development on the mat as students. Thank you for joining me today. Until we meet again, keep teaching and keep sharing the wonderful, transformative practice of yoga. Hey, are you seeking resources that will help benefit you in your development and growth as a yoga teacher? Well, what about free resources? Well, I'm excited to share with you that I have several for you on my website at sandyraper.com. That's SandyRaper. Go check it out, sandyraper.com. I want to support and equip you with all that you need so that you can be successful and thrive in your development and growth as a teacher. Check out the show notes. There's a link that you can find there, or head over to my website, and I can't wait to share these resources with you. Until we meet again, thank you. Thank you for joining me today, and I wish you well along life's journey, and I'll look forward to spending time with you in the next episode.